For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, I'm Moshe Ferber.
And I am Ariel Munafon.
And this is the Silver Lining Podcast, a podcast about security architecture.
Well, hello and welcome back to the Silver Lining Podcast, a podcast about security engineering. And over here in this episode, we're talking to Eliav Ginesin, which is, from my point of view, is one of the best IoT architect developers. What do you want to call it? Whenever I have a question about IoT, Eliav always has the answer, so I'm very happy to have him here because it's such an interesting topic and it's really in the heart of security engineering, how to engineer IoT devices. So we'll say to him good morning in a second. Just before that, good morning, Ariel.
Good morning, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
So Eliav, excited to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about DeviceTown, the company you founded.
Well, hi, I'm really glad to be here. About myself, so I studied physics, electronic engineering in the Technion in Haifa, then in Tel Aviv University. I was a lecturer in assembly language, computer engineering, and I was also one of the first employees in the company that turned to be Nest Technologies, so I'm a lot of years in the industry. Worked a bit in France for several years, then got back to Israel and founded DeviceTown. Maybe two words about DeviceTown. DeviceTown is a startup company, and what we do, we help product manufacturers IoT enable their products by providing them a firmware or a firmware product that enables them to IoT enable their products really, really fast, and send the data to their IoT cloud of choice. So it doesn't matter if they work with Azure or AWS or their own IoT cloud, they can make the product send data there. As you understand, this product is a lot about firmware, about the device side, and of course it has to have a lot of security embedded in it.
Yeah, so this is why I like talking to you, because unlike other IoT experts, you see the full stack. I mean, I see a lot of IoT experts who never been in interacting with the device itself. All they do is take the log or take the feed from the device and embed it into in some kind of framework device services. And again, this is part of IoT engineering, but it doesn't see the full picture. So again, glad that you're here. And let's start with the, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but you always have an interesting view of things. Why do you think it's so hard to build good IoT devices? I mean, just like yesterday, we saw there was a big headlines that I think Intuit exposed information of many IoT device owners. Again, why is it so hard to build good IoT solution?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, IoT solutions are multidisciplinary, which means that you have the cloud security, and you guys know this space very well. So securing clouds in general is a lot of work and a lot of different implementation methods need to be there in order to make it secure. Plus, you have the device side, and securing devices, especially IoT devices, is difficult. There are multiple reasons. One is that when you think of sensors, sensors are small computers, and small computers are weak. So it means that you have to apply, the top-notch security methods on really small computers, and doing that requires a lot of know-how and expertise. Another thing is that when you think of a sensor as a small computer, it means that your users have the computer at their premise, so they have physical access. So think of your cloud server farm, and but you give your users physical access to the servers, okay? So it means if I'm a smart user, I can take one of the servers, disassemble it, and take the hard drive, plug it into somewhere else, and then you get to a much stronger challenge in that respect, because when you have physical access, you can do a lot of hacking and hardware hacking to get to the information on the device. It means that you have to highly secure the device, even if it's a very small device.
Yeah, and we know that Apple, Sony, the DVD manufacturers, everybody failed because somebody were able to open the box and get the secrets out of them. And the court said that it's okay because you own the box, you bought the Sony PlayStation, so it's okay for you to hack it, it's yours. It's not okay to publish the hack, but it's okay to hack them. So it's even not legal.
Yes, you know? Yes. So even from the legal perspective, you cannot tell someone it's your device, but you cannot open it and you cannot enforce it. Okay, so it means it really has to be secure on all the physical elements of the device. Another element is that IoT is really hard to program. I mean, it's really hard to develop high quality IoT products because it's multidisciplinary and you need to know hardware, but you also need to know the cloud and you need to know how to access the cloud. Okay, so you have a lot of notion. You know, think of even a simple, or let's say an obvious feature like firmware updates. To develop firmware updates is a very complex process. If you don't have something that works out of the box, you have to be a really, really good developer to develop firmware updates. And this completes the challenge in terms of the fact that you have to have a certain level of engineering capability to build good IoT solutions. And, you know, when you think of Apple, Samsung, and Google, it's obvious that they can put their hands on the right developers, but... when you're, let's say, a water heater company, okay, and you need to develop your connected IoT product, it's really difficult for these companies to have these kinds of developers in their staff, okay, to hold these types of developers. So it means that you have to have enough engineering, you have to have the right engineers. So that's why IoT is hard because, you know, the number of embedded engineers in the world is really small compared to other types of developers. And... it means that you have the challenge of know-how combined with these challenges that that I discussed beforehand.
Okay, so summarizing this, IoT devices have unique hardware, which makes security best practices such as encryption and generating random keys and stuff like this very hard because it's not you don't have enough memory or CPU sometimes to do this. They're not out of your physical control, which is always a challenge. Somebody can basically hack the physical environment. And they are very hard to program. You need good developers. You need a full stack developer to understand also the internals of the OS, but also how to develop into cloud services. And the fact that we have frameworks and standards that are relatively new and are not currently developing doesn't help. I mean, we need some more mature protocols.
Yeah, and I see it a lot in the market. It's almost always happens, you know, a company or someone develops a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino that is connected to the cloud and is happy, I have a working solution, but its distance from a production-grade product is really, really long because you have to have security and you have to have firmware updates and you have to have a lot of stuff in it in order to be really production-grade. Mm-hmm.
But I see that all the world goes to the IoT side, so how... how can it be? This is a good question, no?
Yes, yes. I think it's and the world goes there. You know, the number of sensors that are going to be there. You know, it's all around us already. And I'm in the market. I see. You know, each year there are, I think, hundreds of millions of sensors added. So it's all around us.
Well, lack of security never stopped us from adopting anything. Right. I mean, when the first smartphone arrived, there was zero. Security capabilities, and we still adopted them, and we survived.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, some companies didn't survive, but most of them survived. Yeah, I guess over here there will be they will have the casualties.
When I am with you, Moshe, I sometimes feel not so secure, so I'm trying to to think what are my, you know, my challenges in the day to day.
Okay, so Eliav, let's talk about how to properly engineer IoT devices. Now, we always try to focus on technology, people, and process. So let's try to stick to these lines. And let's talk about, start with technology. Let's talk about...
Yes. So the way to look at it is try and look on the big vendors, you know, vendors like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and try to see what they are doing. Okay, so So on the software side, there are multiple levels of software solutions that are today part of the platform. So for example, if you work with Azure IoT, then you can use a software that called for that's called the IoT Edge, for example, and this piece of software is actually Docker on a device, okay? Mm-hmm. It runs Docker containers on a device, and all the surrounding of this Docker container is secure in a way. And this way, even if you have an application that you've built that is not, you know, you're a web developer and you build something, it's not the device itself isn't vulnerable to the stuff that you have built inside your application. Okay?
So the container is a way to distinguish between the kernel and the user space.
Yeah, to separate the kernel from the user space. So there are a lot of different efforts that these vendors are doing. You know, Amazon have Greengrass, okay, which is another type of solution. They have Greengrass for Edge, which is Greengrass that runs offline. They have Lambda for Edge, okay? So these kinds of solutions provide, let's say, developers that didn't come from the embedded world, solutions to help them build stuff on these devices. DeviceTone 2 is a solution where, the thing that we are building, it actually separates the programming for people who are not embedded programmers in deploying IoT solutions. So first of all, it's software. The second thing is that the hardware vendors saw that there is a huge problem there. So, you know, when you buy an ARM M0 processor, which is a very, very small processor that costs less than a dollar, you still need security, okay? So people like ARM, for example, created solutions around the hardware that are hardware solutions to help you implement stuff. So, for example, ARM have a CryptoCell CC310. It's a small module that's part of your ARM processor that stores the certificate and knows how to do AES and these kinds of encryption protocols in hardware. Okay, so this way, if I'm implementing stuff on a very small processor, I can still have good encryption. Okay, so these are kinds of solutions. Microchip have ECC 608. Again, it's another chip that does the same. So the idea is that the hardware vendors understood that there's a real issue. The cloud vendors pushed the hardware vendors to implement these kinds of solutions, and eventually you got to better hardware implementation. And there's also another element that is important. You know, we have Moore's law, the law about the chips getting better and better. Yeah. So it's true also for embedded processors. Today, the really small, cheap embedded processors are much stronger than the processor you had before. So you can implement basic security stuff even on the smallest processors, okay? So both from the hardware and the software perspective, you have a lot of progress in the last years, but still you need to know what you're doing in order to get there, okay? So that's a huge problem, and you know, it relates to the second point you made about people. Okay?
Yeah, before going, yeah, or maybe it connect to people, when I look at developers, what the vendors and the companies are trying to do is to help the regular developers have the same framework. You say that you have Lambda and Lambda for Edge, IoT. This is something that they push to this way?
Yes, I'll give you an example from Azure. Okay, so I'm in touch on a daily basis with the IoT SDK guys, the guys that develop the SDKs for Azure IoT. Okay, and they eventually want embedded developers to use Visual Studio and to press a button and to push the solution to the device. So the future of how IoT developer would look like, it would be let's say a Node.js like experience for embedded developers or for people who develop devices, but there is a very long way there. And there's another drawback to this approach that will never be solved. And that's important to understand. Eventually, from the, let's say, financial perspective or economical perspective, companies will always select the cheapest chipsets, okay? Because when you produce a product that has, I don't know, million devices, every cent counts, okay? So it means that there will always be a level of programming for IoT that will not be able to run these kinds of high-level languages and high-level solutions and Dockers, etc. So there will always be some kind of layer of solutions that will need the embedded developers and the low-end development. And from that respect, these companies are pushing various solutions. We can discuss more solutions that they are building, you know, solutions like Azure Sphere, for example. So what they did, they created a separation between the kernel and the user space, like in Linux, but in hardware. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft worked with hardware companies to create this kind of solution. Okay. Google has the same, has something called Edge TPU, okay, which is an IoT solution from Google, which is actually a hardware-based solution for IoT sensors, okay? So
there are multiple solutions. Up until now, I thought Microsoft, Google, and Amazon stay at the high end of things, of the software side. They're saying that they understand that they need to go deeper into the hardware, not to make a complete solution.
Right, yeah. They understand that they have to provide solutions also for the lower-end chipsets. Mm-hmm. For the higher-end chipsets, you know, if you have a Raspberry Pi and app capability, you know, something that is, let's say, a stronger computer at the edge, then, you know, you can use the higher-level languages, Docker, Linux-based security, which people have a lot of experience with. So there are a lot of solutions that are already out there. You just have to package them. For the lower end chips, the vendors are doing multiple things in order to do it. You know, if I'm trying more structurally to look at it, each one of them has his own RTOS, his own real-time operating system that have been acquired in the last year. You know, Microsoft acquired ThreadX, which is it's the operating system of the HP printers, for example. Okay.
Really?
So this is what runs inside the printer. Okay. So so Microsoft bought this company. Amazon took over FreeRTOS, which was the most popular real-time operating system embedded. Okay. And Google have Android Things, which is their own flavor of IoT RTOS. So mm-hmm. on the operating system level, they did something. Each one of them has a hardware project, like I mentioned Sphere and TPU. So these are kinds of projects that are trying to build the next gen hardware for constrained devices. Okay. And each one of them is working very hard on the developer solution to make it more and more approachable to developers. Okay. So they understand they have an issue and they are solving this issue. And also from the security perspective, each one of them has, let's say, a different way of working. You know, Google are using JWT for authentication and Microsoft have SAS, and each one of them has their own types of tokens. But eventually, they're all trying to implement the same solution in terms of making sure that tokens are being generated securely and you have a way to store the certificate and things like that.
Okay, so in the end, just to understand the big picture, I have a device from Google and I want to connect it to my cloud in Amazon. What makes them connect? I mean, I guess they're not building it as a proprietary solution. Will there be some kind of a standard that will...
That's a very good question. No, there's not going to be a standard in the near future because they are, of course, fighting each other. Today, if you built a device with, I don't know, the Google IoT SDK, it won't work with the Azure IoT cloud or with the Amazon IoT cloud.
Because the queuing and messaging protocol is different.
Because the messaging, the authentication protocols, the provisioning protocols, you know, provisioning devices is also a big security problem. It's worth mentioning. But but generally, each one of them is working in his own in their own protocol. There are some efforts. I'm part of the Linux Foundation effort on Zephyr, which is trying to create a common operating system for embedded devices, for constrained embedded devices. So I'm working with the teams there to do that, to try to create that. There are efforts about standardizations of the protocols, but today it's not there. One of the things we've been doing in DeviceTone in my company is making sure that I have drivers for all the major clouds in the firmware. So this way, if you want to work with Amazon, you can do it. And if you want to work with Google, you can do it. But today, this problem is not solved. And I don't see that it will be solved in the, let's say, next 5 years.
Wow.
This is very interesting. Yeah, this is very interesting about the market.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is technology. I think we covered most of it. What can you say about the people behind the scenes? I mean, what can be improved there?
Yeah, so I think we can split the developers that are building IoT solutions to two types of developers. One are developers that came from the embedded world, okay? These developers today have, you know, CSDKs and these kinds of SDKs from all the vendors. So today, if you want to build a solution, you have this. the main issue the industry has today is that a lot of the device specific elements are decoupled from the SDK you get from the cloud vendor, which means that if I selected, I don't know, a chip from a Nordic Semiconductor, I need to build the solution using an SDK that comes from Nordic, and but the driver to the cloud comes from Microsoft. Okay, so I have to like somehow embed this driver into my firmware and make sure that everything works together coherently. So it's very difficult to build a solution today. There are some, let's say, sample applications that were built by the cloud vendors, but because of the dynamic of the market, what happens is that because the chip makers do not want to be, let's say, identified with a specific cloud vendor, and the cloud vendor doesn't want to be identified with a specific chip maker, you still don't have a very good cohesive solution to get everything in place. So it means that embedded developers need to know what they're doing, need to be really good embedded developers in order to develop a IoT solution. And especially they need to have some knowledge in the cloud. And I think that's the biggest challenge. I mean, I'm visiting customers day by day, and I see, you know, horrible things that that people are doing from the architecture perspective, because I don't know, they are building a web server on the device, and the cloud connects to this web server, things like that that are really awful from the security perspective. So I think that's a very big challenge for embedded developers. For let's say the higher level languages developers, if you build a solution that runs on a much stronger device, and then there are really good tools, and the tools are improving to do that from the big vendors, but the baseline is a very strong device. You need to have a device, you know, with at least, I don't know, 16 or 32 megabytes of memory. It needs to have a lot of compute power relatively to a sensor or to an end device. So the minimum requirements are still very high. So it means that you can build very good industrial IoT solutions from tools you have in the market today as a, let's say, a non-embedded developer. But the moment you will need to build a sensor, you'll have a problem. You won't have the tools to do it today unless you are using some kind of framework, okay? And this leads me to, you know, again, what we do at DeviceTone. We help people who are not very, very good embedded developers to build solutions. And there are other solutions. I mentioned, you know, Docker that runs on the devices, and the Lambda, and all these kinds of solutions from the vendors. That enables, you know, what Google did, for example, with Android Things. What they did, they took the Android developer community, which is a huge community, okay, and made IoT accessible to these developers, okay? Because if I'm an Android developer, I can develop an IoT solution on Android Things, okay? But the device needs to be able to run Android, okay? Yeah. So that's the idea. What you know, from the people perspective, this is where the market is today.
So the problem is bigger at the low end devices, and that's true for everything. Yeah. So high end devices will probably work out better. Mm-hmm. A process. You talk about the manufacturing and the onboarding of this. What can you say about the process?
I'll try to for a minute talk about the problem in the process. You know, the problem in the process today is starts with the manufacturing. When you manufacture a device, you know, today when you get a router a new router to your home, it has a password on a sticker on the back, okay? But it means that the factory in China that manufactured this device has the password to your router, okay? You don't think about it, but actually the factory knows your password, okay? So from the process perspective, you have to have enough infrastructure, technological, also process-oriented infrastructure when you manufacture new devices, okay? So think, for example, that you want to generate private keys and store them on the device, but you don't want the manufacturer to know these private keys, okay? So for this process, for example, companies like, I'll give one example of what the industry is doing. Microchip has a chip called ECC608, and when you order the chip from Microchip, you can give them your certificate authority server address in order to create certificates and store these certificates in when they manufacture the chip itself. Okay, so when it's been shipped to the factory in China, the certificate is already stored on this chipset. Okay, okay? So this way the factory does not have access to your keys. Okay, so these are kinds of elements that exist in from the process perspective. There are also and all the big cloud IoT cloud vendors have some kind of an onboarding process for devices, which means that when a device is activated at the first time, there's a key exchange process that's been done to make sure that the device is provisioned with a temporary key, and this key can be revoked, can be handled, can be managed. So from the device lifecycle management perspective, you have different tooling that that come together with the IoT platforms. Today, these tools are only at their beginning. You know, IoT is here for a long time, but when you try and look on how it looks on the different IoT platforms, only in the last year or so, you're starting to see more and more device security lifecycle management elements in the cloud, okay? And of course on the devices, okay? Mm-hmm. So it means that from the process perspective, you have to think about who has access to your security keys, which keys exist on the device, and you know, to make sure that only a device knows only the things he needs to know. Okay, yeah. You don't have anything that you know that provides the device access to more than the device needs. Okay, so this is a very very important element in securing IoT. Okay, mm-hmm. All the breaks that we've seen in the last years, you know, come from you know very trivial elements like you have one password for all your devices, or you have cases where there is some kind of a project API key stored on the device in the device memory. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy that developed the device didn't think that someone will have physical access to the device and will hack his flash memory. But, you know, when you have a million devices, you know, in the field, someone will have access to your flash memory, and he knows what he's doing, and he will hack your flash memory. Okay, so that's where you know, from the process perspective, things stand.
I think also that one of the problems is the variety of the products of the IoT, what is called IoT, and is from a small sensor to a router, and is really difficult, I think, to protect.
Yeah,
and
yeah, to slice it. Yeah, yeah, and I think, again, you know, it's obvious for people who are in the IoT industry, but one of the challenges of the industry is the types, it's not only the sizes of devices, but the number of vendors that create solutions, IoT solutions. Okay, you have, I don't know, I think maybe 20 or 30 chip makers that are mainstream chip makers, okay, for processors. Okay, so it means that you know, if you build a solution on one processor, it may be very very different on another processor, and each one of them wants to keep his market share. So, you know, it's a bit it's similar to, you know, where Linux was, I think, you know, many years ago, where you had different flavors of operating systems from each vendor, and they weren't really compatible. They were theoretically compatible, but in practice they weren't compatible, okay, because the vendors tried to keep the cards to themselves, and it happens and the same happens with embedded solutions.
Yeah, also happened with Android. I mean, each one took their own course, Samsung and LG, and then when you wanted to put a security update, it would break the operating system.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, so that's the IT industry is super fragmented today, and it will keep that way for, unfortunately, for the next years.
Okay, yeah. I have a question because we keep saying that that updates are really important for IoT. I mean, again, vulnerabilities will happen. The question is how fast can you patch your devices? And again, over the air updates are really, really hard. One of the providers, or all of them, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon, are helping you do over the air updates. So this is up to your firmware, and this is core IoT capability, not dependent on the cloud provider.
Yeah. So today, what they provide, to some extent, they provide tools on the cloud to do that, but they don't really provide good solutions for the device side. And this is one of the main hurdles of an embedded developer. And you know, when you speak with people who are building solutions, you know, I mentioned the Arduino type solutions. You know, people are building a great application on Arduino, and now they want to put it in the field, but they don't have the OTA capability, the over-the-air capability. So today you don't really have good solutions. One of the reasons Amazon took over FreeRTOS is because they they said that they want to build better solutions on that end to create like or to have OTA capabilities inside the operating system, but they are not there. And the reason is the fragmentation, because every chipset vendor has his own way, his own SDK to do OTA. Okay, so it means that today this is one of the biggest problems when you implement solutions. What happens in the open source world, there is an open source project called MCU Boot. It's a bootloader for MCU that tries to be a run anywhere bootloader for low-end chipsets. And this is the starting point. And in Devicestone, for example, we use this bootloader as something, as part of the solution to enable OTA for all chipsets. But the industry is still far from having a good unified solution for OTA. And I think that's one of the main issues. There's also, you know, we're talking about people and processes. Think that you have, I don't know, 100,000 devices deployed in the field today, okay? What's the probability of you having the balls to have, to update these 100,000 devices in the field? Unless you have very good confidence in your OTA process, it's very hard to, for customers who already have devices deployed in the field to decide to really patch them, okay? Mm-hmm. Because it's not like you have servers in the field, okay? So when you think of, IoT devices like, the Amazon Echo, okay? Or these kinds of solutions that you have deployed at homes, only after they made sure that they have a really robust process, they deployed this product to the field. And the same process or psychological process goes through everyone who builds an IoT solution, okay? Mm-hmm. So you have to have a really good OTA process. It's not enough to have, some way of patching it. You have to have something you can rely on. And, that leads me to one of my recommendations to someone who builds IoT solutions. Don't invent it yourself, Get a solution that already works. Get someone who knows what he's doing for OTA processes, especially when you have a small chipset, okay? And, you have a constrained device, it has to work, and you don't have a lot of memory, you don't know bootloaders, so you really need to know what you're doing when you're doing these kinds of solutions.
Okay, hold on. In a second, we'll talk about the recommendation to developers. Just, we touched it in a bit. I want to make sure they cover all aspects. The different ways that the cloud provider are treating IoT, like you mentioned, Google is using the Java Web Token and Amazon has different implementation. Can you give us... briefing?
Yeah. I think in order to understand it, we have to understand the dynamic of the whole market, the IoT market. I think 3 or 4 years ago, you had something like 400-500 IoT cloud platforms. Okay, everyone was developing an IoT cloud platform, but the market has gone through a significant consolidation because people understood that to build a complete IoT cloud solution is really hard, and you need to provide the solution for the device side too, okay, which is what we're discussing right now, okay? And eventually this convergence led to, let's say 5 or 6 leading IoT clouds today, and it will continue to converge. Even SAP had their own IoT cloud, but eventually have a collaboration today with Microsoft, and actually it runs on Microsoft Azure IoT, mm-hmm. okay? So SAP went on the public cloud, IoT cloud to Microsoft. Samsung that had Arctic IoT Cloud, which was a huge cloud and a lot of people used it, they closed it, just decided to close it. Okay, mm-hmm. so even the large vendors understand that they cannot withhold a big IoT cloud. I have more examples, GE, General Electric, so these kinds of vendors also closed their IoT platforms. And today you have 3 leading IoT clouds. There are others that are more in the industrial IoT, but the big, let's say, general purpose IoT clouds are Google's IoT cloud, Amazon IoT, and Azure IoT, Microsoft's mm-hmm. IoT cloud. And each one of these vendors have has solutions for the multiple layers of or types of devices that exist. Okay, so I'm starting with the stronger devices. On the stronger devices, as I said, they are trying, each one of them has something a bit different, but they are trying to make the IoT development more approachable to developers that do not come from the embedded background, okay? So I mentioned the Azure IoT Edge, Amazon have Greengrass, okay, the Greengrass solution. Google have TensorFlow, okay. Mm-hmm. So each one of them has some kind of solution to run stuff or to run an analytics and applications on the edge, okay. Each one of them has a different deployment process, but eventually they have a solution for these kinds of devices, okay. On the lower end devices, from the hardware perspective, you have Azure Sphere on Microsoft, where they, as I said, they are working with hardware providers to separate the kernel space from the user space in the hardware, okay. Google have Google TPU, and they have other hardware solutions, so each one of them has some kind of solution. On the real-time operating system side, they understood that they cannot support all RTOSes out of the box, and each one of them took over some kind of real-time operating system to run on devices, okay. Mm-hmm. The main war today is between Microsoft and Amazon, okay. Amazon took over FreeRTOS, and the FreeRTOS, I don't know if everyone knows it, but it was like it is still I think maybe the most installed real-time operating system, and Amazon took over this project. They kept it open source, but they are building libraries for Amazon IoT, of course, mm-hmm. in it, yeah. Okay. And Microsoft retaliated and took over Express Logic, which is the company that built Threadix. Threadix is one of the most successful commercial real-time operating system, and Microsoft are now considering what to do with from the licensing perspective. But I believe Threadix will become more and more free because they have to fight Amazon. Okay, so these are the kinds of dynamics that the cloud vendors are taking. On the security perspective, they all have or are developing both tools on the cloud to manage device life cycles. They have advanced CSDKs and different kinds of SDKs to make sure that the developer has a, let's say, an easy to use library. But still, you mentioned the OTA, for example. Still, the OTA thing is not solved. Okay, mm-hmm. You have to develop it from scratch. There are still multiple elements in the solution that you really need to know what you're doing in order to develop a robust production grade solution. Okay. So this is the dynamic of the market of the cloud vendors today. Another thing that that is worth mentioning is that also from the authentication side, each one of them has a different authentication method. Okay, mm-hmm. People who work inside the clouds know it too. The way you authenticate or the authentication token to Microsoft are different from the authentication tokens to Google. Okay, it looks different. I mean, they have JWT, they have SAS. The way to generate these tokens is different. So they are also trying to provide good SDKs or functions to help you generate these keys using the hardware capabilities of your processor. Today, it's done with partial success. You still have to work with the SDK of the specific chip that you're using in order to get to a really good solution or to a working solution. And the industry has a way to go in order to get to a unified solution eventually. But it will take years, I think.
Okay, interesting. I've learned a lot. Thank you, Eliav. What I'm mostly surprised is how far away are we from a good standardization that will be, like I was thinking in the IoT, what would lead the way is standardization, first of all, because those devices should be work anyway for everyone. So I think this is more vendor-oriented, which is interesting because we're talking about Google as a Microsoft software company, and I see that they are moving on.
They are touching the hardware too.
Yeah, and I will have more and more sensors from Microsoft or Google or Amazon in my house. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a couple of them already, but yeah, I have more and more. So this is really an eye opening. You wanted to finish up with giving some tips to the developers. So this is
I think again, I'm working especially with product companies and, generally companies that are not like high technology or really, the Googles and the Amazons of the world. I'm working, with companies who produce, mass volumes of small products that they need to get to the market. And I think, the what's in it for me for these kinds of people who are now, going into an IoT project or are developing an IoT project. First of all, maintain the basic security principles. And, you don't need to be an embedded developer to understand that you can only store device level secrets on a device, okay? Especially when someone, as I said, has physical access to your device. Someone, a hacker, has a physical access. So you always have to think about this hacker that has physical access to your device. It means that you have to store only device level secret. You cannot store a project key. You cannot store a password. You cannot store your root certificate there. You know, I mean, I've seen horrors, okay? So make sure that you have the right security principle there, okay? And again, these are not embedded rules. They are just general, you know, common sense security rules, and you have to think about security from the beginning. This is one thing. The second thing is that if you're not a real let's say security expert and you're building something really, really special, use standards. Use the standard libraries. Use the standard SDKs. Don't try to invent everything yourself. Okay. So also from the security perspective, you know, you can do your CRC function and build something yourself, or some kind of encryption function yourself, but don't really do it. Just use the standard library that is maintained and patched, and you know that people really reviewed it and made sure that it's you know, that it's intact in terms of security. And this leads me to another really important element, which is, you know, build on something that other people have already built, which means that if you're a web developer and you're building, I don't know, a solution, you know, it's better to pay a price for a stronger device and use, I don't know, Azure IoT Edge or whatever, if you want to build a solution, or buy a solution that already runs out of the box, you know, that that is ready to run. Again, not in terms of selling my product, but in DeviceTone we are doing that. We, you know, we go into product companies and just telling them, listen, you know, you don't have the embedded workforce here, just take a ready-made firmware and use it, okay? Don't deal with stuff you don't really understand, okay? And another common mistake is that an IoT project, because it has a lot of different disciplines and has a lot of technologies in it, are difficult. It means that you have to have enough resources, and you have to have the right resources. You have to have people who know the cloud well. You have to have people who know the device well. You have to make sure that you have enough resources in your company to get to production. Okay. So a common mistake I see is that, you know, in a company, people give someone, half a day a week and build our IoT, you know, future solution. It doesn't work this way. And these projects usually fail, okay? So you have to understand that you have to have the right resources in-house before you begin this project. And the right resources means embedded engineers, means a cloud guy that knows what he's doing, a security the security personnel to review your device side and cloud side. So
those
make
are,
sure you
those
have
are usually everything. Two different people.
Yeah. So you have to have the right resources to start a project.
Okay. So I think that was really interesting. I know now how difficult it is to develop and not to secure, even to think about some IoT product, and it should be doing the right way, I think. Yeah,
like everything. Yeah, but yeah. Now I understand how complicated it is. Yeah. Like, again, lack of standards and very different ways that producers are doing. Thank you, Eliav.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I promise you that you are welcome here to another session, because I think we have a lot to talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.